15. Are abortionists possessed? What about the escorts or the people who work there? Abortionists and the others who work with them can be possessed, but great discernment is needed before any judgment of this sort is made. Sometimes the occult involvement of abortionists, clinic workers, or escorts is clear. Anyone who has come into close contact with escorts at killing centers knows that some of these people are truly infested with demons. Joe Schleidler of the Pro-Life Action League tells the story of one abortion mill employee who admitted to him that workers in the clinics were compelled to attack and revile him as a matter of clinic policy. The employee said that many of his companions in the business were Satan worshippers and that they had to commit sins to counterbalance the good that was being done by the pro-lifers. This is the perverse ethics of Satanists in the abortion business. I might add that I have personally done exorcisms or deliverances on several women whose demonic problems came from their experience of having abortions or confronting the evil practitioners of abortion at close quarters. Other examples documented in Human Life International's massive database of abortion violence make the connection between Satanism, witchcraft, and abortion clear. For example, quote, in 1993, pro-abortion activist Eileen Orstein Janez murdered 51-year-old pro-life activist, minister, and radio talk show host Jerry Simon. After killing Simon, she held police at bay with a pistol for 6 hours while spurting quotes from Anton LaVey's Satanic Bible. On October 27, 1994, a jury found her guilty of murder and sentenced her to life in prison. During the trial, she admitted that she had shot Simon to prove her love for Satan. Unquote. An abortionist in Florida connected to the Wiccan abortionist was wont to regularly taunt and deride the pro-lifers who came to pray at his killing center. This abortionist would sometimes come out of the facility with the bloody abortion instruments in his hands after a morning of business and shake the blood on the pro-lifers. Joseph Mengele, the famous Nazi mass murderer, known as the Angel of Death for his thousands of ghastly medical experiments on living patients in the Auschwitz concentration camp, fled Germany at the end of World War II and became a prominent abortionist in Latin America. Chicago abortionist Henry Howard Holmes, labeled America's arch fiend by the press in the late 1800s, was America's first serial killer, with between 50 and 200 murders committed on people outside the womb. His murders of people inside the womb were exponentially greater in number. Arizona abortionist Brian Finkel told a reporter, "This is my abortion machine where I do the Lord's work. I heal the sick with it." Dr. Finkel was later convicted of more than 60 counts of sexual abuse and sexual assault and imprisoned for 35 years. 16. If they are not exactly possessed, are they evil? Many abortionists kill babies not for demonic, but for rather morally sinful motives, like greed, inhumane ideologies, or a total misguided sense of compassion for women. We must be careful about labeling these people possessed, and we must pray fervently for these people. There is every indication that abortionists are truly desperate people who need prayer more than anything else. Mark Crutcher's groundbreaking book, Lyme 5, has exposed the completely degenerate lifestyles of many people who practice abortion. If abortionists have any dialogue with their consciences at all, they will often confess that they know that they should give up their practice of abortion, but when they try, the accuser's voice intervenes. You have a lot of blood on your hands. You can't leave now. Or, there's no hope for someone who has killed so many babies, etc. The devil does not allow his servitors to have easy conversions without a fight, and this is why they need the prayers of all Christians to bring them out of their slavery. In 2003, I met a woman who ran a Marie Stopes clinic that did clandestine abortions in a rural area of Kenya. She sounded very much like an American feminist when rattling off her prepackaged epithets about reproductive choice. But after some probing, I found out that she was a Catholic who had been trained in Nairobi's Kenyatta Hospital by British doctors and nurses. Although she needed and opted for the high-paying job at her clinic, her conscience kept bothering her. She felt trapped in serving this evil agenda until some local priests kindly offered to find her another job. It was not clear to me whether she would ultimately decide in favor of her conscience and leave the Marie Stopes Clinic, The money of the abortion industry is seductive, and deciding against it is a tough decision for those who live in impoverished societies. Even if people in the abortion industry have given themselves over to a life of sin or occult practices, we must never give up hope for their salvation. We must constantly pray for their conversions and trust that the Lord will use our witness to them for their salvation in His own time and way. The conversion of Dr. Bernard Nathanson, a key player in the legislation of abortion in the late 1960s and 70s, provides abundant evidence that prayer can work miracles, even for those totally immersed in evil. Likewise, Norma McCorvey and Sandra Cano were used by the abortion industry to bring the 1973 court cases that eventually legalized abortion. McCorvey in Roe v. Wade, and obliterated any limits to its practice, Cano, in Doe v. Bolton, respectively. Norma McCorvey tells the touching story of a 9-year-old girl named Emily reaching out to her in Christian love as the main force leading her out of the abortion business. Her autobiography is called, appropriately, Won by Love. Miss McCorvey eventually even converted to Catholicism. In Christ, every soul has hope for salvation, for as St. Paul says, despite the increase of sin, grace has far surpassed it. 17. How has this evil spilled over into American society? There are innumerable ways in which the abortion mindset affects American society, not the least of which is seen in the corruption of the youth culture. I am not attempting here to analyze the complexities of American youth culture. I am just offering some simple observations and examples of the devastating effect that the killing of 1/3 of all children in the United States since 1973 has had on many members of the two generations that have grown up under the terror of the abortion regime. The first and most devastating effect of the abortion culture is the normalizing effect of murder. John Kipley, founder of the Couple to Couple League, wrote a provocative pamphlet called From Contraception to Abortion to Columbine, in which he traces the history of interlinked mindsets which, in his estimation, led to the culture in which we have seen so many killings in recent years. He cites the first rejection of the traditional Christian position on contraception by the Protestant churches beginning in the 1930s, and then the mirror of that in the widespread Catholic dissent to the papal encyclical on birth control, Humanae Vitae, in the late 60s. The same era saw the massive promotion of the birth control pill and the capitulation of the medical profession to the idea that babies should be chemically killed with impunity. There followed the Supreme Court decisions Griswold v. Connecticut, legalizing birth control for married couples in 1965, Eisenstadt v. Baird, legalizing birth control for singles in 1972, and Roe v. Wade, legalizing abortion in 1973, all based on the flawed logic of the right to privacy. From these, Kipley said, society's attitude toward killing very easily changed. The radical subjectivism of freedom from any external constraints enshrined by the court made the killing of innocents a simple matter of privacy and personal choice. Columbine was its logical conclusion. Secondly, it appears that for most people under the age of 35, choice has become an absolute value in and of itself and something to celebrate in art and culture. The crassest of all expressions of this was clearly the art display created by Yale University student Alzia Schwartz in 2008. Ms. Schwartz claims to have privately inseminated herself with donor sperm numerous times over a 9-month period, achieving at least 2 pregnancies, which she claims to have aborted on her own using the RU486 pill. Ms. Schwartz then used her own blood and the blood from the aborted babies to create an art display wherein the blood was mixed with Vaseline and pasted between 2 sheets of plastic wrapped around a cube that hung from the ceiling. She also used the blood to paint the backdrop of the display. This sad and disgusting display was Schwartz's senior art project, and it was initially defended by Yale University under the auspices of freedom of expression. To this day, Schwartz defends her actions and artwork as a perfectly legitimate assertion of her rights in American society. Finally, abortion has contributed mightily to the fracturing of American society into essentially 2 opposed value camps, pagan and Christian, or those who see all truth as relative, and those who acknowledge that objective right and wrong really exist and have a claim on us. These differences are reflected roughly in our political divisions, in our social permissiveness versus true moral values, in the various opposing cultural movements which are growing in intensity each day, in the corrupt media versus the new alternative media, etc. All these divisions reflect diametrically differing views over whether abortion should be legal or not. More examples could be cited of the negative effect of the abortion mentality on Americans and our culture. But suffice it to say that the radical deformation of basic human values is the most overwhelming and long-term effect of this evil. 18. Can a whole society be possessed? Just as a person can be possessed, it is possible for a society to be possessed in an analogous way. Demonic possession is of the body, not of the soul, per se. So we can speak of possession of the body politic of a society in an analogous way. The members and organs of the body politic can be under domination of the possessing demon, and he can commandeer or overpower the spiritual faculties of the soul, their mind and will, in the infested, possessed state. In societies, as in persons, there always remains that basic human endowment of inner freedom, which assures that the person or society is never without its capacity to choose the right path. Father José Antonio Fortera, the famous Spanish exorcist, applies this analogy of possession to a society. He recalls reading the books of Maccabees in an entirely new light when he realized that the Maccabees were trying to accomplish an expulsion of a demonic possession that had taken over the land of Israel. The story describes every level of demonic activity, from temptation to oppression to infestation to possession. In just the first chapter of 1 Maccabees, each of these stages is described in some detail, beginning with the name and description of the possessing force, namely, Antichus Epiphanes, who is called a sinful offshoot, and who invaded and ravaged Palestine after the death of Alexander the Great. The following passages describe the advance of evil into a full-blown possession of a society. Temptation. In those days, there appeared in Israel men who were breakers of the law, and they seduced many people, saying, "Let us go and make an alliance with the Gentiles all around us. Since we separated from them, many evils have come upon us." He spoke to them deceitfully in peaceful terms and won their trust. Then the king wrote to his whole kingdom that all should be one, each abandoning his particular customs. All the Gentiles conformed to the command of the king, and many Israelites were in favor of his religion. Oppression. Then he attacked the city suddenly in a great onslaught and destroyed many of the people of Israel. He plundered the city and set fire to it, demolished its houses and surrounding walls, took captive women and children, and seized the cattle. Infestation. There they installed a sinful race, perverse men, who fortified themselves inside it, storing up weapons and provisions and depositing there the plunder they had collected from Jerusalem. Possession. He insolently invaded the sanctuary and took away the golden altar, the lampstand for the light with all its fixtures, and the golden ornament on the facade of the temple. He stripped off everything and went back to his own country after he had spoken with great arrogance and shed much blood. The citadel became an ambush against the sanctuary and a wicked adversary to Israel at all times. And they shed innocent blood around the sanctuary. They defiled the sanctuary. Her sanctuary was as desolate as a wilderness. Demonic control. Then the king sent messengers, ordering them to follow customs foreign to their land, to prohibit holocausts, sacrifices, and libations in the sanctuary, to profane the Sabbaths, to desecrate the sanctuary, to build pagan altars, to sacrifice swine, to leave their sons uncircumcised, and to let themselves be defiled with every kind of impurity and abomination. Whoever refused to act according to the king's demands should be put to death. These brief quotes show clearly how the possession of a society happens. It always proceeds in stages and ends up in bondage of the person or society. The Maccabean revolt described in both books further highlights, however, that no possessed person ever loses his freedom completely, nor does any society. There is always an element of human freedom that can never be suppressed, In fact, God can even use the state of possession to bring a person or society to a new awareness of self and maturity. In this case, the Jewish feast of Hanukkah was instituted in the life and history of the people of Israel as a remembrance of the rededication to the sanctuary, or temple, once the evil force had been expelled. This shows how God can bring much good out of evil. 19. Is American society possessed or becoming possessed? In a very real way, the demon of child sacrifice entered American society on January 22, 1973, through the doorways of the Supreme Court decisions Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton, which allowed abortion on demand for literally any reason during all 9 months of pregnancy. That decision of the highest faculty of judgment in our body politic gave permission for the process of possession to begin. Prior to that, America was being tempted by Planned Parenthood's pro-abortion propaganda for many decades. There were also numerous cases of oppression or attacks at the state level where abortion activists tried to force their killing practices on the rest of society. But the infestation came when the Supreme Court decisions flung open the door to Moloch and gave him permission to go on a killing spree throughout our great land. I do not believe that full possession by the abortion demon has yet taken place in American society due to the restraining force that we will call the pro-life movement and the restraining force of God's grace that Paul refers to in 2 Thessalonians 2:1-12. However, the power of the demon over our institutions and society is clearly far advanced. The analogy of the city whose walls have been breached applies here. Once the demon gains entrance to the city, the person, the body becomes infested and the demon begins to assert more control over the body and faculties. The analogy to a society is similar. America's mind is embodied in the organs that do its thinking. In this case, the educational system and the public information system, the media. These are totally captivated by abortion. America's will consists of decision-making organs of the body politic, namely the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of government, institutions which have shown themselves to be almost totally devoid of righteousness in abortion politics. America's imagination consists in those institutions that convey images to the public, namely the entertainment and music industries. These are universally pro-abortion in their leanings and products. In a diabolical possession, demons don't need full understanding or agreement to do their evil once they have entered. They just need acquiescence of will. The same happens on a populace where a demon can gain increasing control of the culture and its institutions over time with the acquiescence of the people. In American society, just a minority of abortion-obsessed individuals controls the passive majority who support the demonic activity by acquiescence, if not by full agreement. There is no such thing as neutrality on the abortion issue. An apathetic society on the issue of abortion is a compliant society to the demonic will. A possessed individual can only obtain his freedom from demonic forces by turning to a superior spiritual force that will help him be free. Setting the captives free is one of the proper roles of religion, and the more the individual turns his soul to Christ through the church, the more hope he has of being liberated from his demons. Making religious acts of mind and will asserts, however weakly, his inner freedom and identity over against the possessing power. A society in the same way cannot be free of its demons without the help of religious authority that is stronger than the demons. The devil does not fear human ingenuity or politics. He controls and manipulates these. Nor does he fear prophets. These he kills. What he fears is an overwhelming religious authority endowed with a divine commission to vanquish his kingdom, and that is the church that Christ founded. The pro-life movement represents that relatively weak but distinct force of religious conscience from within the society. Pro-lifers are members of the body politic itself, and by their voices and activities, they assert society's ultimate freedom from demonic control. As a grassroots, decentralized lay movement, however, pro-lifers as such will never be strong enough, resourceful enough, or powerful enough to liberate a society from demonic infestation. The pro-life movement is not a strong enough spiritual authority in and of itself. An infested society needs a church militant to free it from infestation. The church's divinely appointed mission is to bind society's demons and command them to loosen their grip on the body politic. It is therefore no surprise that the culture of death has grown in direct proportion to the weakening of the Catholic Church and her leadership in the past 40 years. When the church is weak in carrying out its God-given mission, all of society is weak. When God is driven out or unwelcome in a culture, demons enter in. Only the reestablishment of a strong, authoritative church will heal and liberate the world from abortion. The demon of child sacrifice, once invited and entered, will not leave voluntarily. It must be driven out by the church. 20. What is spiritual warfare? Spiritual warfare is both a recognition that the church's mission is to battle the kingdom of darkness on this earth and an engagement in such a battle. The weapons of spiritual warfare are just that, spiritual. Prayer, conscientious subjection, and the authoritative expulsion of evil spirits from people and places. Spiritual warfare is entirely peaceful in a civic, social, and political sense. The only ones who are negatively affected by spiritual warfare are evil spirits. 21. Is spiritual warfare in the pro-life cause violent? As mentioned above, spiritual warfare is not a material form of warfare. As such, there is never any justification or excuse for violence of any sort, and anyone who would use the church or tenets of spiritual warfare to justify violence is simply making an illegitimate argument for change that the church neither makes nor accepts. While the church does have a well-established teaching concerning the principles for legitimate self-defense and just war, that teaching concerns material warfare between nations and has nothing to do with spiritual warfare. 22. What forms of spiritual warfare are appropriate in pro-life work? Prayer is the primary weapon of spiritual warfare when understood as an act of the whole church. Laypersons pray powerfully when they stand in front of abortion centers and plead for the lives of the unborn. But they need the leadership of clergy to guide them in the formal public prayers of the church at these clinics, which could include even deliverance prayers or exorcism prayers if properly authorized. Other types of spiritual warfare are the various means of witness and conscientious subjection that have a public character. In Nicaragua in 2006, for example, the retired cardinal and the new archbishop led a pro-life march of 200,000 people through the streets of Managua prior to a vote to remove abortion from the country's criminal code. Faced with this tremendous act of conscientious objection, the politicians voted 59-0 to eliminate abortion entirely. This manifestation of the popular will was totally peaceful, but it was also motivated by and presided over by bishops. Other forms of spiritual warfare can be boycotts, public relations campaigns, organized protests, etc.